Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Supernatural George. I'm Mittens, and today we're going to be talking about Season 6, Episode 13, Unforgiven, written by Andrew Dabb and Daniel Laughlin, and directed by David Barrett. And this is the only episode he ever directed of Supernatural. So this episode exists, and therefore I must watch it. Instead of having to engage with it just yet, I'll tell you the only thing I appreciate about it. This is the first script I ever bought. Mel and I went halvesies on it, but I did the actual buying of it, and then I scanned it. The green pages. I scanned it in color. And ended up with a hilariously massive file that has become a years-long running in-joke between me and Mel. And the saddest and most aggravating part of it is that despite it being one of the earliest scripts that we bought, it's still the only full script we have from all of Season 6. So I'll use this space to issue our usual plea to the fandom. If you have an old Supernatural script lying around collecting dust in a drawer, we'd be grateful for a PDF scan of it to add to the collection. We have scripts from almost half the series. We know it's probably impossible to finish the collection at this point, but golly, every little bit we can get is just more fandom history to archive, and it's fascinating and useful to everybody in the fandom. This is our Green Monster script, and I've always thought of it since I bought that script as the Green Monster episode for some reason, even though there's no green monsters in it. And I've literally been trying to unload that script for years, like eagerly telling Mel anytime she had like ears out that somebody might have a script. I'm like, ask him if they'd trade a PDF. I'll give him the hard copy of this script, like the original copy of the script. And she's like, yes, yes, I know. I know. You don't want it in your house anymore. Okay. Because this episode does genuinely give me the creeps. Not because the plot is distressing or the tension is dramatic or Sam's just so earnestly blockheaded and filled with sads, but because spider people. I have zero problem with spiders. I capture and release them when I find them in the house. But spider people is a concept I really truly do not enjoy for some reason. Though I do confess that I mostly complain about the spider people because the main subject of this episode is Sam's enforced amnesia. He's got a whole year of his life behind a wall and he can't access it. And he still doesn't know what's back there, even though he's determined to find out. And I cannot blame him because one of the most horrifying things to me personally is the thought that I might lose my memories, that I would not know who I was as a person or have, like, I can't read amnesia-themed fic. I cannot engage with amnesia-themed media in general. So this little stretch of Sam not being able to remember that year is particularly hard on me. So I'm probably going to tap dance around it a bit. I will do my best to address it in a way that will not actually trigger me into serious psychological consequences. We don't want that. So this isn't one of those episodes that, yes, I will tiptoe around in a little bit. I do have several different sets of rewatch notes in my tag for it, though, so if I do leave something out, I don't feel so bad about it because I have three different sets of rewatch notes, plus other people's commentary posts on the episode, so I don't personally have to engage with it too heavy. And speaking of my tag, we do have a standout bonus item in the link this week, which I mentioned right at the top of this podcast. Our first full script in a while. And the only full script we have for the rest of the season. But the best takeaway from this episode for me was that it gave me back my ability to like Sam as a person. Like at all. After watching so many episodes of him completely lacking all the goodness inherent in his character, and the things he did without his soul, to give him any moral compass at all, it feels like catharsis. And even though he's got more rough times ahead, this is good because we get to reflect back on that soulless period through Sam's eyes himself, and he is even horrified by it. And it's just so satisfying to people who maybe started to hate Sam this season because of how awful he was. It just feels good to be able to like him again. proof that Soulless Sam, even though several other people claimed he was a great hunter, you know, like Bobby even said when he was under the truth spell, you know, Sam's been a better hunter than you lately. This proves that, maybe not. Bobby hadn't been hunting with Sam. Samuel had. He'd seen Sam. He might be ruthless and efficient and willing to do whatever it takes to finish the job. But as we've gotten glimpses of in the last few episodes before Sam got his soul back, he wasn't doing a great job. He was missing big, obvious clues and was totally inflexible and unable to change his understanding of what was going on. And often thought he was done with the job when no, in no way was he done with the job. So this proves how not great of a hunter Soulless Sam was. Ruthlessness does not make you a great hunter. So with that, let's get right to the then segment and see if we can't get through this one mostly intact, just like Sam. We open the then segment with a little flashback to appointment in Samara, with intercut reminders of how Sam lost his soul in the first place, that it was still in Lucifer's cage, and the warning that if Sam actually remembered all of hell, you have no idea what those memories would do to him. We also get a quick cut series of flashes of Soulless Sam being ruthless, and Dean trying to convince Sam that Death said he could put up a wall to protect you from all of those memories. Followed up by a warning from Death as he returns Sam's soul not to scratch the wall. We flash forward to Sam having found out about the wall and having been soulless for a year and confronting Dean, "You should have told me." And Dean's like, "No, because that information is dangerous and could kill you." But Sam, having his soul back, is compelled to set things right, quote unquote. I don't think there's really any setting this right, Sam. Just lay it aside and move the frick on with your life. But he's Sam, so he can't just let it go. And he's right, Dean would probably feel compelled to want to set things right. But I think Dean is at least rational enough to understand not everything can be set right. And if everything's good now, Dean is very much a please don't rock the boat kind of guy. And Sam is not. Sam will rather rock the boat until everybody drowns, just because he can't live with something uncomfortable in the boat with him. Dean could ignore it for the rest of his life. So I think Sam is wrong about that judgment of Dean there. And we end the then segment with Cass chastising Dean, telling him that his soul felt like it had been skinned alive, and if he wanted to kill his brother, he should have done it outright, rather than shoving his soul back in him. Cass was against that from the start. And it's like, I get Cass is up in heaven, fighting his war, trying to find a way to defeat Raphael. And his life is on the line too. And he's doing all of that to keep Dean out of it. And he's very frustrated with having to deal with these huge issues back on Earth. And Dean actively hurting himself by what he did to Sam. And it's like, Cass, none of them would have been in this boat in the first place if you hadn't just gone to Dean right off instead of trying to do this whole freaky ass plan. So anyway, it really does make Cass look bad, even though he's at the end of his rope and doing everything he can. It's like the more he tries to fix it, the bigger the hole he's digging around himself gets. And it's just depressing. But then we come to now, or rather Bristol, Rhode Island, 1 year ago. A flashback to Sam without his soul. We see a gunshot, and it's Sam, absolutely expressionless, ruthlessly walking around a room, shooting people, executing them, as Samuel watches on, like giving Sam a look like something is seriously wrong with this guy. And then the music is doubling down on that, the tinny, slightly out of tune, dramatic chords and little bells. And it's the sort of music that screams, something is seriously wrong with this guy. As Sam and Samuel leave the shack or cabin or whatever where they had committed these acts, Samuel asks Sam if he's okay. How's the arm? And Sam brushes it off as it'll hold. And you can see him bleeding through his coat. So he's been injured. As they're driving out of town, a cop car pulls them over. the cop knows them, addresses them as Agents Rourke and Winan, characters from an Ayn Rand novel. So that tells you the kind of personality that Sam's got going on right now, and it ain't great. The deputy is freaked out because he can't get the sheriff or any of the other deputies on the phone, and then he spots the blood on Sam's sleeve, and immediately jumps to conclusions, like the sheriff was supposed to have been doing something with them, with these two supposed FBI agents, and they're not providing immediate answers to his questions that he finds satisfying. He tells them to come with him. Samuel suggests that he'll follow the deputy back to town, and the deputy's not having it. He wants them to get in his car or they're under arrest. Samuel is taking this serious, but Sam laughs. He's like, if you think you're going to arrest two federal agents. He turns away like he's going to get back into the van. Like, he's heard enough from this guy. They're just leaving. The deputy goes immediately for his gun, and Sam turns around and starts wailing on the guy. When the deputy lands on the ground unconscious, Samuel's like, do you think there were calmer ways we could have done all that? And Sam's like, do you care? Like, I got the job done. Let's get out of here. As they drive off, Samuel looks down at the unconscious deputy like he regrets this. He realizes this is not good. This is a problem. But there's not really much he can do about it now. And he pulls out of town and we get the title card. And I think this goes a long way toward vindicating Samuel for everything. Of course, he didn't give two shits about Sam in reality. I mean, he worked with him for a year, even after this. This was towards the beginning of their partnership, apparently, a year ago. But also, this is the Sam that he knew. This brutal, ruthless, emotionless hunter. And yeah, I'd throw that guy under the bus to save my daughter, too, if I was given Samuel's situation. And he doesn't know enough about Dean, other than Dean defends Sam. Dean defends that guy? The hell? He's probably no better, even if he doesn't really know Dean. So, yeah, I can really understand Samuel's choices there, because I want to throw this Sam under the bus. After the title card, we skip to the present day. Dean walks into a motel room where Sam's watching TV. Sam's been watching the news to try and catch up on all the current events he's missed over the last year. He's like, Mel Gibson really took a turn this year, didn't he? Dean's like, yeah, or he's possessed. Dean's come back with fast food, though, and he's just spoken to Bobby as well, who says it's quiet. Bobby's got nothing else on the mother of all, but all the monster activity seems to completely have settled down. When Sam gets a mysterious text, it's just coordinates. He has no idea who sent them to him. The coordinates lead him to Bristol, Rhode Island, where three women have disappeared in the last week. But Dean's more curious about where the text came from. Could be a case, but who sent them those coordinates? Sam very logically and smartly says, well, it could be another hunter asking for help. Who knows how many people I worked with during that year with the Campbells? It could be anyone. Somebody I just don't even remember exists. Dean is super concerned about Sam wanting to go there and check out the case. He's like, we can't just ignore missing girls. But Dean knows that this could have something to do with Sam's soulless year. And he is really nervous that it's going to do something that's going to, quote, scratch the wall. Dean's condition for going is, if things get squirrely, we are out of there. And Sam's like, yeah, of course. And we all know he's going to just double down on that as things get squirrelier and squirrelier. There's going to be whole swarms of squirrels going on. And yet it's just going to make Sam dig in his heels. Because that's Sam. Frickin' little Taurus that he is. And no, I don't give credence to all the astrology shit, but, you know, some things are too on the nose to ignore. As they're driving into town, they have a cute little billboard, "Welcome to Bristol, Rhode Island," with a lighthouse and an octopus, like, cheerfully waving them in with all its tentacles. That's on the nose, considering we're dealing with spider people. But also, the deception that it's actually an octopus instead of spider people. Still, eight legs. And beneath it, it says, where memories are made. And in this case, possibly where memories are rediscovered. But Sam made memories in this town. He just doesn't know it yet. So just shout out to Jerry Wanick and the art team for that. Just seeing the billboard, though, Sam has a couple of quick flashes of people and grayscale and fight scenes that he is starting to remember something. And what looks like a fishing net at first in the original shot of the billboard, it looks like the octopus is holding part of a fishing net. In this, it looks like a spider web. When Dean notices Sam's looking unsettled, he asks him what's wrong, and Sam's like, oh, nothing. And Dean doubts that, but he doesn't say anything yet. He's trusting Sam, and Sam is once again breaking his trust because Sam is so determined to make things right at all cost. And to be fair, yes, it is Sam's life to throw away if he so chooses, but man, he just goes about it in the worst possible ways sometimes. I mean, not that Dean and Cass and everybody else don't, but this is Sam's particular worst way to go about it. Sam and Dean sit in a little seafood restaurant going through the missing persons reports. The three women have nothing in common, aside from the fact that they're missing. Dean gets up to go to the bathroom and leaving Sam at the table alone when a woman and her husband come over to talk to Sam, and they know him. Sam just has to pretend to remember them. The woman leans in close and is like, you're back because it started again. And Sam's like, what? The disappearances. Sam brushes it off as, oh yeah. So if either of you hear anything, please let me know. On his way back from the bathroom, Dean looks at a wall of people who have completed the captain's dinner or whatever, the eating challenge that you can earn your free dinner. And in the background of one of the Polaroids, he spots Sam. He pulls that particular photo down off the wall and runs back out to Sam, who is now being questioned about where his partner is. Big bald guy, Agent Winan, and Sam's like, oh yeah, and he's trying to come up with an excuse when Dean strolls up behind him. Dean makes a dismissive comment that Agent Winan's now in sex rehab and makes everybody feel slightly awkward, but it gives them an easy way out of the situation. But as the woman walks past Sam, she's like, nice chatting with you, Agent Rourke. And she puts her hand on Sam's shoulder and sort of sensually drags it along Sam's shoulder. And he has another little flashback of him having sex with her, apparently, in the restaurant's bathroom. As she walks away, she turns it to Sam and winks. But at least that is unsettling enough that he confesses to Dean, I think Samuel and I worked a case in this town. And Dean's like, you think? And shows Sam the Polaroid, proof that he had been there before. But at least that gets Sam moving. They go back to the rundown house where they'd apparently been squatting. And Dean is packing up all their gear and like, come on, let's get out of here. And Sam's like, I can't go. I've got to figure out what all of this is about. I must have thought I solved the case here. I wouldn't have left. And yet now it's happening again. I didn't solve this case. I need to solve this case. Dean can't understand why it's different. Last time it was five guys that were disappeared. And this time it's women who are being disappeared. And Sam's like, either we missed what was causing it or we failed to stop it. Dean's like, okay, that's great. I'm glad you figured that out, but let's get the hell out of here. We'll call Bobby. He can do it. Put another hunter on it, but we cannot touch this case. Sam uses the excuse that this creature or whatever is doing this is only still walking around because he failed to stop it. He needs to finish the job that he started. Dean is arguing that hunters tend to leave messes behind them. And that's why we don't go back and hit the same town over and over again, because those messes will eventually catch up with you, which is obviously the point of this episode. Sam's, quote, mess of his entire soulless year begins catching up with him. Sam tries to address Dean's concern. He tries to frame Dean's concern as, you're afraid I'm going to kick this wall so hard that the hell memories are going to come flooding out and leave me a drooling mess on the floor. And Sam's kind of like dismissive of it. And honestly, that's only half of Dean's concern. Half is they have no idea what mess Sam left behind in this town. Aside from just the unfinished case, what other fallout is there going to be because of his return? But Sam turns it back on Dean. He's like, I understand that, but every person who gets taken or dies in this town because of a job I failed to finish correctly, that's on me. Sam has learned one thing from Dean. It's definitely the how to take the guilt and responsibility of things that aren't your fault and just internalize them. These guys, man. When Sam throws out the, and you'd do the same thing, like you would feel responsible enough to want to stay and finish the job correctly. Yeah, Dean actually might. And he realizes that he's like, man, I should not have drilled that lesson so hard into this kid. And Dean, thinking it's the safer route, after learning that, sends Sam to follow up with the cops because he may have a pre-existing relationship with them. And Dean follows up with the women. As Dean's interviewing one of the women's roommates, who's been best friends and roommates with her since college, he's flipping through business cards in a bowl on the table and finds one for Agent Rourke, Sam's alias. Dean is concerned. He asks her where she got that card. Apparently the missing woman got it from Agent Rourke last year when one of the men who disappeared had lived in their building and they were interviewed by him. She tells Dean that Agent Rourke came by a few times and Dean asked what they talked about. And the woman awkwardly informs Dean that it was loud and athletic. And Dean gets it. Sam repeatedly went back to this woman's apartment to have sex with her. Meanwhile, Sam goes casually strolling into the police station where a cop pulls up. It's the deputy from the cold open. He starts yelling at Sam. Hold it right there! Pulls a gun on him. Sam immediately flashes back to what he did to this man. Beating the tar out of him before driving out of town. Like, problem solved. Now he feels like an idiot for just strolling into the police station like this. You should have listened to Dean, Sam. But this time, Sam cooperates. He lets himself get handcuffed. He goes to prison. They lock him in a cell. And the deputy tells Sam, you are dumb as a sack of hair. And yes, he is sometimes, isn't he? Sam's not always the smart one. The first thing the deputy says is you're not even an agent. The FBI's never even heard of you. But this entire year, this deputy has assumed that Sam lied to him about his identity because he was the killer. He wants to know where the bodies are because families want to bury their loved ones. And honestly, this makes the deputy, while understandably distraught, also kind of dumb because if Sam actually had done the killings, would he have just strolled up to the police station like this, knowing that he had beaten this guy up the previous year and that there would be consequences for all of that? No. Sam pleads amnesia and begs the guy to believe him. Deputy's like, nope, tell it to a judge. Late that night, yet another brunette woman comes strolling into the jail and demands answers from Sam. Where's my husband? Sam pleads that he has no idea. The woman's like, don't lie to me, Sam. I know who you are. I know what you do. And then Sam has a series of flashbacks to him and Samuel explaining to this woman and her husband what they actually do, that they hunt monsters. And Sam remembers just enough to know that her husband was the sheriff. And she's like, was the sheriff until he vanished and then you vanished. And I didn't know if you killed him or that thing got him. And she just wants answers from Sam. And Sam tells her, yeah, so do I. The woman is doubtful when Sam confesses his amnesia to her. She thinks it sounds like a soap opera plot and that he's just making it up. Because remember, the Sam she knew was kind of an asshole. Sam's like, if I remembered any of this, would I have set foot in this station? Would I have put myself in this situation? He's like, I don't even remember your name. If she remembers him, if she knows what he does, she'll know that he is just there to help because that's his job. She's like, you really don't remember, do you? And Sam's like, nope, not at all. She introduces herself to him as Brenna Dobbs, and he promises that he can find answers, but not from inside a jail cell. And she lets him out, even though the only version of Sam she knew was the asshole soulless guy. But since she's at least a little bit smart, she's like, I'm gonna get some rope and make it look like a breakout. You're gonna have to tie me up. So that at least gets her off the hook for responsibility for releasing him. We then cut to a scene of the woman from the restaurant earlier who recognized Sam back at home with her husband. She's drinking wine from a box in the fridge. Her husband gives her a look like, you're drinking again? She's like, what? It doesn't get better with age. She tries to get a little more out of the box and the spout is jammed and then for some reason is going down to the cellar like that's going to fix the wine spout. I don't know. Who knows why she went down there? But as she's descending the stairs in the dark because the light switch is busted, a hand reaches through the stairs, trips her. She falls to the bottom and then screams as something looms over her. Yeah, I think she's the critter's next victim. Back at Sam and Dean's squatting house, Sam is clearly on edge. Hears a noise outside, hides behind the door, pulls his gun on Dean as Dean walks in. And he's like, yeah, so how's it feel to be a fugitive again? And Dean really enjoys telling Sam, told you so here. Like they should have left town immediately and not looked back and found another hunter to take care of this because this is all bad. And the timeline doesn't seem to match up because Sam was in that prison until late at night and this feels like the next day already. Dean's like, I just spoke to this woman. So did he not spend all night in the jail and maybe it was they just turned off the lights on him and it was only a few minutes actually? I don't know. Sometimes the timeline just doesn't make any sense and we just ignore it, like most of this episode. They hear over the radio that there's now another missing person. And Dean orders Sam to stay put while he goes to check it out. Because, you know, at least he hasn't already burned all of his bridges in this town. And Sam, of course, does not listen to Dean and stay put. Meanwhile, Dean has found out the connection and is trying to even just call Sam to tell him, but Sam's not picking up his phone. The connection between all of these missing women is Sam. They all banged Sam the previous year. And this whole thing, the texts that led you here, the specific women taken, was supposed to be a trap just for you. Meanwhile, the timeline goes a little bit wonky again and it's night again. And Sam is at Brenna Dobbs' house when she comes home. Brenna thinks that Sam did something to Debbie, the woman who we saw disappear in her basement. Sam is like, yeah, I need your help. Figuring out what's going on. I need the case files your husband made last year. Brenna doesn't want to help him. She tells him to go to the police station and get that. He already tried. He broke in, looked, and the files are gone. Sam has a flashback to sitting in that living room a year ago where Brenna's asking, so you guys just move around the country all the time? You just pick up and go? That must be hard. Samuel replies that when you're young, it's great, but once you've got a family, it gets hard. And we know that that's what Samuel worked for, to be able to settle down in Lawrence with Mary and his wife and just have a life together. And he was trying to give Mary some sort of stability and normalcy and not this traveling around constantly thing. And now Samuel's set himself up as the patriarch of this Campbell clan of hunters, trying to give them all a home base. And Sam has no connection to that. He doesn't care about family. He doesn't care about anything without his soul. But we also know that that, again, is what Samuel made his whole deal on. Getting Mary back. Giving her the life that he deprived her of, he feels. He blames himself for. And that's all he cares about. And even her children, look how horribly they turned out. If this is how John Winchester raised his grandsons, this is bullshit. Samuel excuses himself to go get another beer, and Brenna says he really misses her, his daughter. Do you have any other family? Sam's like, oh no, we have more of a business relationship. Family just slows you down. And I think Sam's hating hearing these words come out of his mouth. But we know this isn't just soulless Sam. This is a Sam who never came back to hunting and found Dean, because that's the Sam we saw in the alternate universe that the Pearl Wish was creating in Lebanon. This work-driven, soulless version of himself. Sam has more flashbacks as they look through the evidence files from the previous year, the missing persons reports. He remembers the men covered in this white, fluffy substance. And then he remembers Samuel showing it to him, saying it probably came from an arachne. They don't really know anything about these creatures because they haven't been seen outside of Crete, and they haven't even been seen there in more than 2,000 years. Yet all of a sudden, here they are, because they're stirring up the monster populations. So they have no idea how to kill one, and Samuel's just like, yeah, so I guess we just go after it until something sticks. So that explains why they thought they had killed it and left town. They didn't stick around long enough to make sure. They know where its hunting ground is, but Sam, in all of his frozen soullessness, has a plan to draw it out to them. Rather than searching the entire area, lure it out with its preferred bait. A man who exactly fits the victim profile of the missing men. Sam comes back to himself and asks Brenna if she minds if he takes all of this with him for a few hours, because he thinks he knows what's going on now. And as he boxes it up, Sam's like shaky and distressed. She's like, you really don't remember Roy, do you? And Sam offers her an apologetic smile, like, sorry, no, outside of these memories of flashes he has of him. She tells Sam that she's accepted that he's dead, but she just wants to know what happened to him. Sam tries to reassure her, telling her he's sure Roy died a hero, and then leaves. For some reason, everything is suddenly covered in snow because Vancouver winter. But Sam doesn't notice the spider webs covering one side of the porch. And he finally gets a notification of his message from Dean. And as Sam's standing there on the porch listening to the message we heard Dean leave for him hours earlier, he pauses and looks around and notices the cobwebs. And as Sam's learning that this whole thing is a trap for him, and Dean is ordering Sam to call him back, Sam just quietly pockets his phone, puts down the evidence box on the porch, and we see through the perspective of a creature with multifaceted eyes, a kaleidoscope of Sam being an idiot, to the point where Sam doesn't even hear Dean coming up behind him on the porch. He pulls a gun on Dean. Dean is furious. He's like, I figured you'd come and talk to her. Didn't you get my message? Come on, we're getting you out of here. And at least Sam has the sense to follow Dean. Sam casually tells Dean that it's an arachne he remembered. And Dean's like, excuse me? What else are you remembering? Sam's like, don't worry, it has nothing to do with hell. And it's like, that's not the point, Sam, because the hell memories are all crammed in there with these soulless memories, and if some are leaking out, others might too. Stop making the hole bigger. Dean again tries to convince Sam to leave town, get other hunters, Bobby and Rufus can come finish this up, and Sam's like, how? I know who did this, I just can't remember. It's like, Sam, what do you think, every other hunter on the planet is incompetent? Like, they couldn't follow the same clues to the same ends that you can? Like, you're the only unique person on the planet with the capability to put these clues together and figure it out? And Sam, very rightly and correctly and rationally, counters with, I'm starting to think I did some really bad stuff here, and the wall's gonna crumble or it won't, and I need to make that right if I can. And once again, Dean is leaving the choice on Sam. Sam is doing this with his full mental capacity and understanding of the situation and making a full informed choice to risk himself this way. Dean helps Sam set up a murder wall with all the facts of the case that they have, all the history from the previous year's case, and he lets Sam wander down memory lane. It takes him through a long series of flashbacks. Sam's plan to send Roy in as bait They sent him in without any knowledge that they were using him as bait because Sam argued with Samuel that it will be a better performance if he doesn't know it is a performance. Sam was specifically letting him be attacked by the monster, completely unaware. He didn't ever get to make a choice to risk his life like that. Sam just threw him like a scrap of meat. Samuel expresses his concern. This is just not the way I'm used to doing things. And Sam frames it as, welcome to the future. And it's like, not the future, Sam. It's just you not giving a shit about anyone else. Sam and Samuel are crouched in the bushes on the other side of this park where they've sent Roy. And Sam says, let's hope this thing is hungry, like it's going to eat Roy. And they're literally expecting it to pounce on him. Samuel is horrified by this suggestion. As they're watching, the monster just drops out of a tree, lands on Roy, and disappears just as quickly with him. They didn't have a chance by the time they get out there with their machetes to attack the thing. It's long gone. Samuel wants to immediately search the area because they couldn't have gotten far. Sam's like, no, don't worry about it. It's too late. But I turned on the GPS on Roy's cell. We're just going to track the monster. And Samuel was once again appalled. So what, Roy is just a red shirt to you? Spider bait? And Sam's like, no, of course not. This is my backup plan. And it's like, no, Sam, it's not your backup plan. This is what you wanted. You wanted to corner the thing in its lair. And then we see Sam and Samuel walking into the same building that they came out of in the cold open. They cut their way in through giant spider webs and find a bunch of bodies completely wrapped up in little cocoons. All the missing dudes. This is the Arachne's pantry, apparently. And horrifyingly, they're all still alive inside those cocoons. Sam finds Roy, cuts the spider web away from his face, and asks him where she is. And his eyes go wide. She's right behind you. She attacks Sam. That's how he injures his arm. And then Samuel shoots her 6 times through the back, and it does nothing to slow her down. Sam comes back up with the machete and just beheads her, and that apparently does the trick. Samuel wants to get Roy and the other men to the hospital. They're technically still alive. They can be treated and saved. And Sam's like, are you kidding? Just look at them. I don't know about arachnids, but brown recluse spiders can kill people. These guys have been pumped full of venom. It's just eating them alive. Let's just put them out of their misery. Sam stands over Roy with his gun out, and Roy's begging for his life. No, please don't do this. And Sam just gives him the little speech. Killing this thing saved a lot of lives. You're a hero. And then he just executes him, or thinks he does. And we go back to the cold open scene. Sam walking around, executing all the men trapped inside their cocoons, while Samuel looks horrified and disapproving. Since they can't just leave the bodies, Sam tells Samuel to get the gasoline. They have a little bonfire with them. And then we come back to the present. And Sam, looking at Dean, knowing what he did, every detail, and he's horrified with himself. And I think he's a little horrified that Samuel would even continue to hunt with him at all after all of this. But at least he knows what happened now. And he knows how bad a hunter he actually was. He thought he'd finished this case. He'd just made it 1,000 times worse. Meanwhile, we cut back to Brenna Dobbs' house. She wakes up from a nap on the sofa to discover Roy, her supposedly dead husband, standing there in her living room. We saw Sam execute him in the previous scene, and yet somehow he's still alive, but hoo boy, he doesn't really look human anymore. While Roy is talking to her, just staring at her, and she's slowly backing away, Sam is trying to call Brenna to give her a little update. She asks Sam to swing by. And he's like, yeah, I guess I could do that. At least he's wary that it's part of the trap. Sam and Dean show up, pull out their machetes. Now they know that shooting an arachne in the head doesn't kill it. Sam's about to go in the front door, and he tells Dean to go around back, but Dean sees a light on in an outbuilding. They find Brenna crouched down in a corner in the outbuilding, and she asks Sam, "What you did to Roy, is that true? Like, used him as bait, executed him, or tried to, burned his body and left?" While Sam is distracted trying to come up with an answer to that, because, yeah, he feels horrible about all of this, Roy sneaks in behind and throws Dean into a net. Then he throws Sam across the room, pins him to the wall, and demands that Sam answer the question. Brenna just stands by and watches Roy get his comeuppance against Sam for all of this. Sam and Dean are now tied to a post with spider thread. While Roy is getting his vengeance speech out, Dean spots some broken glass on the floor and is trying to work a hand free to grab it to cut through the spider webs. Roy tells Sam that the thing that Sam threw him to wasn't looking to feed, it was looking to breed, to create new ones of her. She didn't envenomate them to digest them, she envenomated them to turn them. And Sam came to every wrong conclusion a year ago, but was so convinced he was right and that he had finished the job. He was not a good hunter, soulless, because he just didn't care enough to do the job right. And I hate all of this, but I sincerely appreciate the condemnation. You tell him, Roy. And because all the other men that Sam had shot and then thrown on the fire, that didn't hurt any of them. They all ran, scattered to the winds, have now probably bred again many other times. And Roy set all of this up thinking it would be a flashing neon sign to draw Sam back in, that he would immediately know what was going on. And he's like, "I couldn't figure out why you weren't getting it, and then I find out you've got amnesia." And he thinks that's hilarious. All the women that he took are now like him, and they're already gone. "You thought you killed one monster, but you made so many more. Congratulations. Like, you are the worst hunter to ever live. You made it 1,000 times worse." And that's what this relentless pursuit and hunt of monsters does inevitably every time. It makes the problem so much worse. Roy still hasn't decided which would be worse, though, killing Sam or turning him. And all through this whole speech, Dean has been slowly but steadily cutting through the spiderwebs binding them. Dean finally frees himself, goes diving for the machete, misses it. Roy tackles Dean and pins him across the room. And Brenna has an attack of conscience. She cuts Sam free, and he takes the machete and beheads Roy. And nobody is happy in the end. Sam has to live knowing what he's done. At least he stopped this particular monster, but there's so many more out there now because of him. Brenna at least knows what happened to Roy, that he died this horrible thing. It wasn't really her husband anymore. And Dean's really not happy for Sam because this is going to do shit to his wall. Back at Brenna's house, Sam follows her up to her door and tries to tell her he's so sorry, but she doesn't want to hear it. She goes inside and slams the door in his face, and I don't know how Sam thought he was entitled to any more of her time at all ever. Sometimes, Sam, there's just no way to make things right. Back at their cabin as they're packing to leave, Dean asks Sam if he's okay, and Sam tells him that Dean was right. They shouldn't have come back here. Will Sam learn a lesson from this? No, siree, Bob, he will not, because they never learn from these sorts of lessons. Dean is trying to find a silver lining to this. He's like, "Well, you know, at least you killed the Spider-Man, you know." Sam's like, "You think any of this was a good thing?" Dean counters with, "Well, you know, you've got to understand all the stuff you did during that year, that wasn't you." And Sam's like, "Let's be crystal clear here. It was me. And no, Sam, it really freaking wasn't you. It was your body. It's like what you would do when possessed by a demon. It's stuff you would never do if you were of sound mind and body. It's not." It's not the choices that Sam Winchester that we know and love would ever make It's just your empty body doing stuff like zombie style. It's not you. And Dean goes to packing. He's like looking through, seeing what needs to be laundered and sorting his clothes to leave. And you can hear Sam saying, "Yeah, I'm just trying to thump." Dean looks over and sees Sam has just gone unconscious and fallen to the ground. He's thrashing around like he's having some sort of seizure. And then we zoom into Sam's eye and we see him in hell, surrounded by fire and screaming. And that's how the episode ends, with Sam's wall threatening to break entirely right there. And that's how next week's episode will begin, as Sam comes out of that. But for now, let's leave it there, because there's nothing else to really take away from this episode. There's no ongoing discussion that needs to be had. This is tidying away soulless Sam crap. We know he was terrible. We know that it wasn't really him, even though he feels responsible for what happened with his body during that year. He was just an irredeemably awful human. Because he wasn't really a human. He was just a sentient body. There was no humanity to him. No human soul. None of the part that transcends the body was still with him. And I think that's a distinction that the show has forcefully tried to make over the years. What is a human soul? And that's something that season 6 epically deals with throughout the season from different layers of the narrative, from the personal human to what the power of a soul is on the cosmic scale. Thank God the Spider People edition of that is now finished and I never have to talk about them again. Thank God. And we just have to assume that some other hunters beheaded the rest of those Spider People offspring, or that they just wandered into some bug spray or something somewhere, because holy crap, they're just gross. And we never see them again. We never hear about any other hunter running into one. We never hear about him even during the British Men of Letters days down the road in season 12. So they're not a creature that anybody really wanted to revisit. And I get why. And that's my 2 cents on this one. But we learned some things. We learned why we like our Sam, because our Sam is horrified by soulless Sam and his actions. And it sort of vindicates Samuel just a little bit. I mean, you can't just call him blatantly evil and horrible when you understand the context of his entire year with Sam, which was probably a lot like this. And he may have known Sam and known how he hunted, but I don't think that really endeared Samuel to him at all. He got the job done in Samuel's mind, even if it was in ways that he found morally repugnant. So honestly, yeah, it's just a tiny bit of character unassassination for him. Anyway, next week we've got one more trip through one more of the trifecta of terrible that is the middle of season 6. 614 Mannequin 3 The Reckoning, because gosh, everyone just loves the Haunted Kidney episode. Nobody loves the Haunted Kidney episode. It's cute that it compares baby to a sex doll, but other than that, no. Until then, you can find me on Tumblr at MittensMorgul or at SPN George. You can find me on Discord at MittensMorgul, or you can email me at mittensmorgul@gmail.com. And I look forward to talking to everybody again real soon. Just hopefully not about this episode, because I hate this one. And I'm kind of glad that I'm taking a week off next week from my usual recording schedule, and I'm ahead in the recordings, so it will not affect my posting schedule at all. I'm going to have to catch back up to where I am now, but kind of glad I get to take an extra week off in the middle here, because oh my god. Although, you know, maybe I might just record it tomorrow just to be done with it, because that way I can just start back up with French Mistake, and that would be great after a long break. But no, I won't do that. But we'll see. Maybe I'll have time, because this episode is so short. Because I hate this episode. Sorry, Dav. I mean, I get what you were trying to do here. I'm glad to feel kindly towards Sam again. And I'm even glad to have a little bit of redemption for Samuel in understanding him and his relationship with Soulless Sam, but holy crap, Dean was right. Y'all should have just avoided this. And Sam went in with both eyes open to what the potential risk was, but I think he didn't really understand what was on the line here. He didn't remember hell. He doesn't remember what that kind of torture is like, but he's about to get a refresher course in it, and it's going to be awful. So it is opening a door to awfulness that will be stuck to him until towards the end of season 7. He's going to have to live with this brokenness in himself, but you know, tis what it is. But I mean, I can understand completely also why Jared had such a hard time during this run of the series. This is like the let's flog poor Sam some more run of the series, you know? And for someone who really identifies emotionally with his character, this is a lot. So, yeah. Anyway, I think that's enough on this one. Have a good one, everyone.